Blog Talk Radio.
From two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska, this is The Side Vibe, brought to you by Dogworks Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dogworks Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Side Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming, and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood sides on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto calling in from the beautiful Willow, Alaska. And on the line, we have our host, Dorothy Wills Raftery, calling in from New York. Dorothy, how's it going?
Hi. Good afternoon, Robert. Good morning there. It's great here. We're actually experiencing some almost summer-like weather in the 60s, so we're enjoying today. And how are things by you?
Not too bad, about 22 degrees. We got some snow on the ground, and we're finally using the trail. So it's all good here in Willow.
That's excellent. And I just have to say, I'm very excited about us debuting our very own song today. That was really exciting, and I hope that our listeners like it.
I love that intro, and congratulations, or thank you, better than to Chris at Pro Voice USA. He did that for us, and he does all of our intros, and I think he did a great job on that one.
He really did, and Chris, if you're listening, thank you. It was really terrific.
So today, Dorothy, we have something that's very close to your heart. We're talking about canine epilepsy, right?
Yes, we are. And as you and a lot of my readers and listeners know, I am the mom of an epi dog, Gibson, who my book was based on. And this is a very near and dear subject to my heart, so I'm very excited to talk to our guest speaker. Before we do, I just want to mention briefly that today is actually Veterans Day here in the United States. And I just want to take a moment to thank all of our veterans, both human and canine, past and present, for their service. My own dad was a World War II veteran who served with the U.S. Army's Big Red One, 1st Division, then the Rainbow Division. And he had many dogs of war on both base and those he saw out in the field, and was a great dog lover. I actually have a photograph of him on my blog today that is a tribute to our veterans. And an interesting point of information, since we are all about Siberian Huskies, and I talk a little bit about this in my blog, is that among these canine veterans, one of the breeds of war dogs was a Siberian Husky. In a beautiful book that I have in my personal library titled Buck's Heroes, the author is a veteran and scout dog handler, Johnny Mayo, and he talks about the many different breeds of canines that first served as war dogs, including the Siberian Husky. And according to the United States War Dog Association, when Pearl Harbor took place on December 7, 1941, the United States military working dogs included 90 Siberian Huskies and Malamutes. And according to the book, and I quote, these dogs were used as pack and sled dogs for rescue in areas of the world where motorized equipment could not go, unquote. And Buck, the star of the book, Buck's Heroes, also served as the United States War Dog Ambassador before he crossed the Rainbow Bridge in 2006. So to all of our veterans and war dogs, we salute you.
Awesome. Very cool. You know, when you speak about those Siberians and the Malamutes, I know in Colorado they had a place called Camp Hale, which is up near Leadville, Colorado, and they worked with a lot of those sled dogs up there. So very cool story. Thank you very much for sharing that.
You're welcome. As we spoke, November is National Epilepsy Awareness Month, and I am a big advocate for awareness. Of course, as I stated before, you know, Gibson was the subject of my illustrated children's book, What's Wrong with Gibson, Learning About Canine Epilepsy. And I just recently launched my Live Gibstrong Canine Epilepsy Awareness Campaign, and it includes awareness bracelets, T-shirts, all these items are up on ArcticHousePublishing.com, and a percentage of the proceeds are being donated to the Canine Epilepsy Resources, a phenomenal online resource folks can find at www.canine-epilepsy.com. This site is filled with lots of valuable information, links, resources, and it's also home of the EPL Canine List, and this is an emailing list of Happy Dog parents worldwide who share information and offer support to each other. And it doesn't matter what time of day or night you go online and you kick a letter out to these folks and someone's right there, you know, to support you or to help you with some information. And as an Happy Dog parent, Robert, I found this site to be extremely helpful. And, you know, just something I really, really encourage any EpiDog parent to really go and check out. Through my Live Give Strong Canine Epilepsy Awareness, I really hope to raise some funds to continue to donate to the Canine Epilepsy Resources Emma's Fund. And today we'll be chatting with Emma's mom, who is the Canine Epilepsy Resources co-owner and site manager, Marion Mitchell, who's late Dalmatian Emma was the original face of canine epilepsy and who the Emma's Fund is named after. Marion and her husband, they immigrated from the United Kingdom to the U.S. in 1963 and lived in Ohio until they moved to New Mexico. Marion says her passion for canine epilepsy started when her beloved Epi Angel Emma started seizing at just 15 months. In 1996, Marion, who was initially one of the first people to join the original Epi Canine list, she took over that list and soon after became busy with the Canine Epilepsy Resources website, which I mentioned was canine-epilepsy.com. In speaking with Marion, I really complimented her on the success of this list and the website, and I loved how she feels about it. She said to me that I like to think of it as a family, and that is really how it seems. 5 years ago, when Emma was within a couple weeks of her 14th birthday, sadly she disappeared from her yard, which Marion said had a 6-foot wall and fence around it. They never did find her, and they presumed, unfortunately, that the coyotes got her, but they really don't know. They didn't get any closure on that. Marion explains the Epi Canine had been working with the neurology department of the Veterinarian School of North Carolina University in their research project on how the medication Keppra works with other AEDs, and that's anti-epileptic drugs. They started a fund in Emma's name at the vet school, and so far in the last 5 years have donated almost $20,000 for most of it from the sale of their Epi Canine Family and Friends calendar, which they actually just finished and it'll be going out soon, and some from donations from members and their friends. Through Emma, Marion says she has learned much about canine epilepsy and how people who own dogs that seize will walk that extra mile and then some. And she says her model should be never, never give up hope. And I totally agree with that. And Marion, welcome to the Side Vibe, and thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you, Dorothy, for asking me.
I want to start by talking about canine epilepsy and your Emma. You mentioned that Emma first began seizing when she was just 15 months old. Can you tell us a little bit about when she first started and how you determined it was epilepsy?
Well, it was very scary. The first time it happened, I saw her fall on her side, and I thought she was scratching her side against the carpet like dogs do sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The second time, the next day, she fell when I was sitting eating lunch. Again, she fell on her side. I think it was both times it was her left side, and started making the same movements as before. But this time, I realized that something wasn't quite right. So I took her to the vet, and he suspected she was having seizures. The next day, she had a huge grand mal behind the TV, which was, again, very frightening because of all the wires. I was worried she would get tangled up in them. I rushed her to the vet, and she was diagnosed with epilepsy, which in the end turned out to be inherited.
Okay. Now, what through those early days, I know you also started a journal, which you have shared on the website, that chronicles Emma's seizures and your experiences. Through those things you share, you know, so many different things. How did it help you to write the journal? And, you know, what did you learn as you went along? And when did you decide that, you know, that's something good to share with everyone?
I think I started it when we first decided to get a website going for Epi Canine. And I also needed to keep track of what was happening and also to help myself deal with emotionally with all that was happening. It's very difficult to keep everything chronologically in order.
Mm-hmm.
We just started the website, and also I felt it would help others that were in the same situation as I was.
Great. I do want to talk a little bit about the EPO canine list, but I just want to go back to Emma for a minute. When she was diagnosed, what was the you know, routine that the vet prescribed to help her with these seizures?
Phenobarbital, that was all at that point.
Phenobarbital.
She had had 3 seizures in 3 days, and that's the...
Wow. And did she get some relief from the phenobarbital?
For a little while.
For a little while?
About a year, yeah. And then we had to move on to other things.
Okay, and then we're going to talk more in depth later about the different medications and also mm-hmm. some different things that Marion had discovered for Emma worked really well. We have so much information available to us today, thankfully, including your wonderful website and the EPO canine list. What types of info, if any, was available to you at that time?
Nothing, really. Even from my vet, there wasn't much information. There were several small, say, internet pet groups before the World Wide Web started. In other words, I'm saying before the pictures and everything mm-hmm. became available. And I joined that and became friends with Alicia, who started the EPO canine list, and eventually became the owner about 6 months after it started. And then I had the help of other hand-picked list owners throughout the years. And it's helped me gain so much, both emotionally and scientific, and I decided that this is what I wanted to be involved with as long as I was able.
I mean, it is something that, I mean, it affects our dogs in a way that you have to do something to help. And then I think the more you connect with others, I think the better you feel, too, because so many of us do feel when it happens. I know with Gibson, I felt very alone. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know anything about it. So I imagine that connection probably just continued to grow.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell our listeners about the EPO canine list for those who may not really be familiar with it? Like, what exactly is it and how folks can join it?
Well, it's an email list, excuse me, and it consists of about 1,000 owners of epileptic dogs. And we discuss their problems and successes with the other members. Not all of the members participate. Some just lurk and listen and learn. And others are more vocal. EPO canine is moderated. That means all posts go to the list owners, who then approve the post. We do this so that the atmosphere is kept warm and inviting. Even in this kind of a group, a few people can spoil it for others by being cruel or giving incorrect information. And we've had that happen, and it's beyond me how people can do that when it's something to do with your dog's health. We've got members from all over the world. It's totally amazing. And we have a well-known neurologist, Dr. William Thomas, of the University of Tennessee. He answers difficult questions when need be. And Dr. Jean Dodge, you may have heard of her, from California, who also helps when low thyroid may be a cause of the seizures. And many of us send blood work to her, and she will to test for the levels of KBR, I mean, potassium bromide and phenobarbital. And then she will write back to you or call you with her take on the situation. She'll also call your vet. She called my vet, and he was most astounded because he'd waited in line to hear her at veterinary conferences. And here she was calling him.
I think that's amazing connection that you have created there.
Yes. You can join by going to our website that Dorothy has mentioned, www.canine, which is C-A-N-I-N-E, and clicking on the button on the right-hand side of the first page, how to join EPO Canine. And then one of us will take up your application, check it out, and then send you all the information you need to be able to participate.
Now, Mary, what do you see as the biggest benefit to EpiDog parents about being part of this list in the community?
Oh, well, I think the biggest benefit, other than all of the information that we share, and we do share a lot, is the feeling that no one is alone, because this disease just makes you feel alone. I can't explain it, but I know that Dorothy knows what I mean.
Absolutely.
Because we have list donors in the USA, Canada, Belgium, UK, and people can find help 24/7. Both Dorothy and I can attest to the fact that this is such an extremely frightening condition for the owner, because we really don't know what's going to happen in the end or how we can help.
Now, what do you find to be the most asked question that you get about canine epilepsy?
Will my dog's life be shortened? That's a biggie. People hear things from other people that aren't quite true. And another one is, I'm scared about what I hear about the effects of the medication, so I'm not going to medicate my dog. Then you have to explain that most dogs manage perfectly well on phenobarbital, but many don't, and that's really the people who come to the list of people who have real problems with their dogs and the medications. And the other one is, will my dog ever be normal? And I say, I hope so. Mine was.
Yes, and that is a key message that I hope listeners walk away from today. And Robert, you know, I've talked about this too, that, you know, canine epilepsy is not a death sentence. There are so many options. And, you know, I just recently did a Gibbs Strong Epilepsy Awareness brochure that highlights the various resources and links that we have, such as canine epilepsy resources and other links as well. And it talks, I talked to about 9 or 10 different EpiDog parents who contributed their testimonies that dogs can and do live full, happy lives with canine epilepsy. And I know we're going to talk more about that also during this hour. Now, Marion, can you take folks through the various types of seizures? You know, there may be some listening who think their dog might have had one, you know, they're not sure, or, you know, what types are there?
Sure. Well, the first one is a mild seizure, which we call petit mal. It's similar to human petit mal. And it can be as simple as momentarily staring into space, or an upward eye movement, or something that is just a little bit off with the dog. The next one would be moderate, which most of our dogs tend to fall into. It's also called a grand mal. And the dog falls down, loses consciousness, and extends its limbs rigidly. The limbs paddle, the dog salivates, possibly loses control of bladder and bowels, and vocalizing, which is like a blood-curdling scream. This does not mean that the dog is in pain. It's involuntary, and I believe I heard that it is due to the express air coming out of the dog's mouth.
Okay, that's a very important.
Used to do that. Yeah.
That's a very important fact, I think, to know, is that the dog's not in pain while going through this.
Right.
I'm sure that's something all first times and repeat people know too.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. It could occur for 1 to 3 minutes. It sometimes seems like 1 to 3 hours, and it's most often followed by a period of restlessness, pacing, bumping into objects, and this we call the postictal period, where the dog is, this is after all of the pattern of limb salivation, etc., the dog will usually kind of stop seizing and then go into this next period, which I said is called the postictal. Mm-hmm. The dog is conscious, but maybe appear deaf, blind, and disoriented. Emma used to just walk around, bump into windows, chairs, anything. And we had to put a leash on her, so that she wouldn't go falling in the fish pond, which was a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I found that Bach's flower essence rescue remedy you can find it in health stores and some regular supermarkets. It used to bring her out of a seizure or out of the post-exil almost immediately. Doesn't work for every dog. I just put 4 drops of the essence, don't mix it with water, straight into the dog's mouth after the seizure has finished. As I said, it doesn't work all the time, but there's enough time that I think it's a very worthwhile thing to have on hand.
Now, that is one of the things that I did learn, and I do mm-hmm. have listed to that I think EpiDog parents should always have in their first aid kit.
Exactly.
I know for us, we can get it from a health food store. And while you're talking about this section, I think it's key to also just mention, like you said, you put Emma on a lead. Gibson mm-hmm. was in the house when he had his, when he had all of the times. He was fortunately in the house. But I do have stairs, so I think it's important that people know, you know, keep the dog
yes.
safe, away from plugs, stairs. You know, he went through the blinded, disoriented period. You know, just for me, I just kind of tried to stay with him, keep him calm, keep him on the level where he wasn't mm-hmm. trying to get up or down the stairs. So it is really key to keep them safe during that period of time. And again, that rescue remedy I do have in my kit, and folks can go to their health food store or even their veterinarian office. I know ours carries it.
Probably more expensive.
Probably.
I was going to say something. I found, and some others find, that this is the most frightening time. The actual seizure is over so quickly, hopefully, but this can go on for hours, and you don't take your eye off the dog, because, as you said, the stairs, and we have an indoor fish pond, which doesn't help much, all sorts of things.
Right.
Well, the next one, status epilepticus, is extremely dangerous. The status can occur as one continuous seizure lasting 10 minutes or more, or a series of multiple seizures in a short time with no period of normal consciousness. This may be life-threatening, and please, people, if you find this happening, get yourself to the vet ASAP. It can be death. And the last one we talk about is cluster seizures. Also life-threatening, multiple seizures within a 24-hour period of time. It's sometimes or often difficult to distinguish between the two types, and veterinary assistance is really, really imperative. In this case, Rexall Valium is extremely useful in breaking cluster seizures, and a lot of people actually use it for the moderate seizure if they know that their dog has cluster seizures. But some dogs seem to be allergic to it and don't respond or respond in the exact opposite way to what they're supposed to. It doesn't calm them down. It revs them up, and that's not too good.
That's a good point to know.
Yeah.
Gibson wound, he had both. He had had in the past grand mal and cluster seizures, and they are very mm-hmm. scary, very scary. We
mm-hmm.
were fortunate that he was going, and he had several. He would stand there, look at me, drop right down, go into one, try to get back up, automatically went right back into another.
Mm-hmm.
And we did manage in between, I believe it was the third and fourth one, to get him out. And he's not an easy dog to move. He's at the time, he was about 105 pounds. He's a woolly Siberian husky. And that was my husband. You need someone strong. And that's another thing, too, you know, to have some way of getting your dog to the hospital, whether
yes.
it's a blanket to roll them on. We also have a ramp, you know, in my case, my husband carried them. But that's another thing, too, when they're having that, you need to make that quick exit.
Yeah, another thing that some people use is a sled.
A sled?
Because you can just put a blanket over it and then pull the sled up the steps or wherever you need to pull it with the dog on it, of course. Never thought of that one?
No, I never thought of that one. But maybe we don't sled. So I'm wondering if some of our listeners, and I know I want to, in a minute, I want to talk to Robert also because he is, you know, a musher and trains dogs. I just want to, for any listeners who are tuning in, we are chatting today with Marion Mitchell of the Canine Epilepsy Resources, a valuable online resource for canine epilepsy information. The website is www.canine, and that's canine-epilepsy.com. I know many folks had asked me about Gibson, and what I find the two common questions are, what caused my dog to have a seizure, and did I do something to cause him to have it? And, you know, there really is no cut and dry answer to why a dog develops the seizures, you know, is there, because there are many possible causes. It can also be unexplained. I know you spoke about hereditary link, I believe,
oh, yeah,
with Emma, and that through investigation, I believe, turned out to be the same with Gibson after I tried to track down some information. Unfortunately, you know, how and where people obtain their dogs, it's not always as easy to get it. You know, people don't always want to offer that information. When I finally tracked down who Gibson's person was that bred his mom and dad, and she said to me that the dog never had seizures, and further in discussing it, she said, well, you know, it is funny because when she was 5, she had a seizure, but I took her to the vet and we suspected it was a toxin because there was poison ivy around the doghouse, which, of course, you know, why someone would leave that type of thing around a doghouse is another question, because, you know, we do a complete yard check and try to remove all that. And she had it twice, she said, and they kind of left it open-ended, but that was Gibson's mom, so, you know, I couldn't get any more information anywhere. That was kind of the end of the trail for tracking it, but it did lead us to believe, in his case, it could be hereditary.
Well, I know Emma's, well, she had, I found out later, there were 6 puppies, 3 had seizures. The grandfather didn't have seizures himself, but produced many seizure puppies and grand puppies. There was complete denial, but when I don't think I told you I was the director of the Dalmatian Club of America Seizures and Epilepsy Group, so I had the pedigrees at my hand,
okay,
and I could see where it was coming from because I knew what was going on. But I think I was there for 12 years. I did that, and I hope that I got through to people that you just don't cover this up because it's such a devastating thing to happen.
Exactly. Not to cover it up, and, you know, just, and then to keep having, you know, more and more dogs who have it.
Oh, yeah.
And like I said, in Gibson's case, you know, I felt they probably knew, but just didn't want to share it. For whatever reason, and I wasn't going to give them Gibson back. You know, I love my boy.
No.
I was trying to find a link to what it could possibly be, because there are so many different causes. You have hereditary links, environmental toxins, side effects of medication, stress, that it just sometimes really helps to know, you know, where it's coming from, I would think, in order to help treat them.
Well, low thyroid is another cause.
Well, this is true, and Gibson also has a low thyroid condition, so he is on medication for that, too. And I just want to state, too, epilepsy can affect so many different breeds. Emma was a Dalmatian. Gibson is a Siberian Husky. Robert, you work in trained sled dogs. Have you had any who have experienced seizures or had canine epilepsy, or, you know, have you had any dealings with that with folks in the mushing world?
You know, last year, I believe I experienced a seizure with one of our sled dogs. His name was Woo, and we were out on the trails, and, you know, he stopped and fell down and looked like he was dead. And, you know, he extended out his arms and his eyes rolled back into his head. And, you know, it was one of the most terrifying things that I've ever witnessed out on the sled dog trail. And, you know, I sit there and, you know, just hoped that he would come back, and, you know, within a few minutes he had popped right back up, and, you know, I rubbed his tail and, you know, his chest, and he popped right back up, and he seemed to be fine. And I don't know if it was a seizure or not. He's never had one since or before, but we're thinking that it was part of some type of sugar imbalance or not enough food that day or something like that that caused that. Because he, you know, he's a very active, very strong, athletic dog. And,
that can happen.
You know, yeah, I think that's what had happened. And, you know, that's been, in all of my years, that's been my only experience with any types of seizures or epilepsy in general. And I've learned so much from Dorothy over the last few months that, you know, talking about this and her dog Gibson. And, you know, it's such a fascinating subject, and I'm glad that we're sharing it today.
I am too. And the sugar issue is interesting. And I know, Mary, I would like you to elaborate a little bit on that too. With Gibson, one of the things that I've learned, you know, and I have to say one of the things that's not in my first aid kit, but it's one of the things I do talk about that I keep on hand. I know some folks use different things, but pure natural vanilla ice cream after he came out of a seizure, that helped to bring him back. And I know sugar levels are very important. And what I do with Gibson now is as a person gets hypoglycemia, I kind of treat Gibson the same exact way. He gets mini meals now throughout. Like, he'll get a mini meal in the morning with his medication, then he follows by the, you know, the rest of it while the group has their regular breakfast, which is, you know, a couple hours later. Throughout the day, he gets little healthy snacks. His dinner, I split his dinner as well, so he gets I call it the snack dinner, and then that's followed about an hour later with his medication and his regular dinner. And Mary, maybe you can talk a little bit more about that sugar point in epilepsy.
There's various theories about this. I don't know whether you've seen on the list recently, some people have said that their doctors say that the sugar level goes up during epileptic seizure, so you shouldn't give more sugar. And other people, it's the opposite. I've only given is Rescue Remedy that has a little sugar in it, I guess with alcohol, but I've never done any of the other tea. The ice cream thing was started by a person that I mentioned yesterday, who has another list. But the vets don't seem to think it's scientifically proven or something like that. I don't know. I've heard various things about it. So.
And I think that there is, I guess, a gray area. I know that there's some folks, too, and the other thing about when you do the ice cream, and it's the same with a person, if it works, and the only way you know if it works is if you try. It is only a spoonful, and then it's followed the same as it would be with a person, with something low-fat mozzarella, creamy peanut butter, chicken, maybe organic yogurt. You know, some type of protein needs to follow it to help balance it. This is purely my experience and some things that I've heard, too. But as Marion said, you know, it is something that's a gray area, and I think when you have your blood panels and you talk to your vet, you kind of know where your dog's range is and maybe what works best for him.
Yes. Well, as I said before, that the essence doesn't work for everybody. How did I find? Oh, we went to a holistic vet once, and she told me about it. And she also said you could rub it on the dog's ear. It's the other place to put it. Because the skin is thin there. I used to just pop it in his mouth.
Excellent tip.
Yeah. Oh, I guess on the top of the head was another place.
Okay. And ice is important too, isn't it? Like cooling, keeping the dog cool.
Well, yes. And there again, Dr. Thomas does say, I think I have a section, I believe it's in there anyway, on the website, with Dr. Thomas's, you know, his ideas. And he says that this bag of ice thing is not good. So, again, he said keep the dog cool, but not with a bag of ice.
But not with a bag of ice.
Right.
With Gibson, I use what's known as a cooler bed. It's basically a water bed for dogs.
That's
and
good.
I would say that, and I keep an oscillating fan in. I do that 24/7. Our dogs have their own room. Right now we have two that are recuperating from surgery, and they have selected to stay in their bedroom spots. But the other three love their room, which is off of our family room. It has an air conditioner, an oscillating fan, and Gibson has, and I do keep Gibson, he has a very large crate, because for him, I want to keep him safe. I don't know if he has another seizure. I do have multiple dogs. You never do know how they're going to react to a
Tell me about
seizure.
That one.
Right. And, yeah. You know, so he is in there. I have a baby room monitor that I keep on him, so when he's not right in my sight, I do have that. But I do keep the waterbed in, and I use that for him all the time, and that is not ice cold. So that I think that would probably go along then with what he is saying. And you know, for me, I do keep that on him all the time, and he does seem to seek it out. So hopefully, that might be something folks could try too to help keep
that
body.
Yeah, people have said a bag of frozen peas. I'm trying to find.
I've written about that even in the book. We've used frozen peas, and I've also used a loaf of Italian bread under his armpits, just you know, to bring it down some.
Yeah.
But I didn't keep. You don't keep it on there for a long period of time, or I didn't. But it was to help cool him down initially. But I've never used ice packs per se. It was always frozen peas and a frozen loaf of bread, cool cloths, and the cooler bed.
Because I'm trying to find it. It's somewhere on there. Oh, here we are. Okay, let's see if I'm right.
Dorothy, if you could expand us a little bit about the prognosis for epi dogs. You know, what is? I know Marianne had mentioned. Does it curtail their lifespan a little bit? Can you share a little bit of information on that while Marianne's looking up her subject there?
I found it.
Oh, she did. Okay.
Okay.
Do you want me to? Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right. He said, prolonged seizure activity can indeed cause dangerous elevations in body temperature. In dogs, body temperatures greater than 107 can be dangerous and require prompt veterinary attention. And cooling the body surface with ice or ice water is not usually recommended, as this can could cause constriction of blood vessels in the skin, which impedes cooling. Okay?
Okay, yes.
Also, it may induce shivering. A more effective technique is to wet the body surface with cool water and use a fan.
Yes.
Now, this was written probably before the cooling beds became popular. So.
Mm-hmm. And I know the cooling beds have had several modifications. With Gibson being such a large dog, we did spring a few leaks, and he did find the cap and thought it was the way to get water. So we had a little bit of a pool, but he's had this one for quite a while. So it is that even cooling, constant even cooling with the oscillating fan. To answer your question, Robert, I don't know if we can necessarily say what a lifespan of an epi dog is. What I can say, and from my own experiences and from talking to others, is that, you know, with love and care, you know, and with Gibson, it's medication, it's dietary, you know, they can live full, happy lives. You know, they can do things the same that they've always had. You know, it's you hope that their life will be fine. I've talked to several people through, you know, my Five Sibes Facebook page who have had epi dogs live to 14, 15. You know, it varies. It depends on the type of, I think, the type of degree that they have, I think, of epilepsy. I think it depends on how they're being treated, whether medically, holistically. You know, there's a lot of things that play into it. What I can say is, dogs with epilepsy can and do live long lives, can live happy, full lives. I don't think that there's a definitive that you can say it will shorten their lives or it won't. I think there are a lot of variations in that that could attribute to that. You know, there are definitely dogs who have lost their lives, who maybe had severe, you know, issues. I think we can only do the best that we can do for them. And the more stories we hear about these dogs turning 14, 15, and 16 that have epilepsy, that either they were controlled or had a few seizures in between, those are the stories that really warm my heart, because then it gives me a lot of hope.
Well, as you know, Emma's went from seizures every week to 8 in 7 years with the diet.
That's wonderful. And, you know, I do want to talk about, you know, Emma's diet, too. And, Marion, you found out something that you refer to as the silver bullet for Emma. I mean, there are medications and there are different, a lot of different things that we all hear. What was the silver bullet for Emma?
It was the diet. We really had no choice. She was up to 180 milligrams of phenobarb twice a day, which for a 40-pound dog was quite a bit, and 2.5 cc's of potassium bromide twice a day. Her levels, if she went any higher, I don't know what would have happened. And we had nothing to lose. And I can't remember her name, but we had a canine nutritionist on the list, and she suggested go raw, and I did. But I also contacted Dr. Billinghurst, who was the guru of the BARF diet, bones and raw food diet. And because Dalmatians can have a problem with stones, bladder stones, caused by they don't process purines and proteins properly, we had to do one that was low in protein. And so he devised it for me. Lots of leafy green vegetables, things like that. And the magic happened. It was just incredible. I mean, she went from being a dope-top dog to being a dog that was full of it.
So. See, and that's I think, another excellent thing for EpiDog parents to know, that that is another choice, that is another avenue that can be explored. You know, when I do talk about that there's so many different things to try for the dogs, for Gibson's case, he is on phenobarb, potassium bromide. He's also on thyrotabs for the thyroid issue. But it's 3 years for him, and he had the medication. He has always walked around a little kind of lethargic in a drunk-like state. He has weak hind-end issues, and that's not an easy thing with a dog whose weight varies between 99 and 115.
Right.
At his highest point, he hit 115. That's when the side effects from the medication, pheno, makes him extremely hungry. So I wound up supplementing a diet. I talk a lot about pumpkin puree. I add pure pumpkin, green beans into his diet for healthy fillers. He has now come, well, I'll get to that in a minute, but, you know, in the drunk-like state, his potassium bromide, he was on very high levels of potassium bromide.
Yeah, I remember.
Milligrams. Yes. And then he had a severe reaction because the pharmaceutical company decided to change the formulation without notifying anybody via public, didn't notify the vet. And I did question, because you can tell visibly it looked different, but he did have a severe reaction to that. He became, he had bromide toxicity, and we had to immediately cut back his potassium bromide intake to 600 milligrams. One of the things that's very important with an epi dog is periodically having those blood levels checked. I do them pretty frequently for Gibson to stay on top of what's happening, where his liver functions are. He's had 3 blood tests so far since that bromide toxicity, and he is now, he's staying at what is viewed as a normal level of potassium bromide in his system. And, you know, I'm keeping him at that lower level with the vet, and he's actually a whole different dog now. He's
good.
Running, he's jumping, he's more active, he's back down to his pre-epileptic weight of 99.5 pounds, and he ranges a little bit in there until like 101, so he's got a great deal of weight off him too, and it makes a huge difference. The other fear, of course, is will he have backslide, you know, seizures. Right now, you know, it's always a watch and see type of thing. But I do know with his diet, I do incorporate a lot of that vegetables and home-cooked chicken and meats into his diet.
No grain?
I keep him on very little grain, very, very little glutens. He doesn't, through trial and error, I did try the gluten-free completely, but through different trial and error, he doesn't seem to have an issue, but I still keep them all actually on, as little glutens as I can.
Yeah, well, I think I'm almost positive that Emma was, quote, allergic, I don't know what you call it, because she was on a lot of rice and stuff, if you know what I mean. Directly the rice she would fall over immediately she'd eaten and have a seizure. And they thought it was might have been something to do with a liver issue, but it wasn't. It turned out to be the rice in the food acting very quickly. I don't know how, but I think it something happens in the body. And once I took her off the whole grains and put her on the raw diet with just chicken and vegetables and fruit, that was it.
That's great. See, that this is, again, something that, you know, every dog parent should, you know, can look into is, you know, check the diet, check the type of things that the dog's being fed. You know, it's a great place to start to try to eliminate some things and then, you know, see how the dog reacts to it. You know, it's very important. And I know there's so many toxins environmentally. Check the yards, make sure there aren't any kind of plants or any kind of poisonous things that can be toxic to a dog. And it doesn't have to be an obvious poison. It could just be something out there that, you know, just clear the yards, you know, it could be very, very different kinds of things. We never really know. But, you know, I think if you start and check each thing and eliminate some things, then, you know, it kind of puts you in control and it might have an excellent benefit for your dog.
Yes.
Now, we talk a lot about dogs being active, and this, Robert, goes back to your question of their life, quality of life, or lifespan. I want to talk a little bit about the quality of life. Now, in Emma's case, she was always quite active
An
Epi dog. I mean, can you tell our listeners about the hikes you guys take or took?
Well, I asked my husband, Terry, a little while ago, how many 14,000-foot mountains did you climb? And he said 15.
Now, you have to repeat. You have to repeat the height of that mountain again.
14,000-foot mountains.
I mean, this is wonderful.
This is in Colorado. And lots of lower ones in New Mexico.
So being an epileptic dog did not stop her from having a good life and being able to climb these mountains.
I don't know whether this is similar, but our younger son had terrible, terrible asthma when he was a toddler. And the way I dealt with it was to treat him normally, and he did normal things. And if he had an attack, he had an attack. I didn't believe in, I always say, coddling them. And I know that sounds a bit harsh, but she did so well. You know, it was, I want to go hiking. She loved going camping.
I think that's wonderful. I know I've talked to different Epi dog parents. You know, there are some, one lady that I've gotten to know has a dock dog, and her dog does, you know, does jumping into water. Other ones go for long hikes. I know some gal still mushes and, you know, does her own private sledding, and her dogs are active. So I think it's just a great message to get out there to folks that these dogs can and do really can and do live these great lives. What do you see as the key thing that Emma taught you, Marion?
Patience. One of the things, she taught me so many things academically and emotionally. I didn't know anything about this disease. It's really hard to... to say, I just love that girl so much.
Yeah.
What happened to her is, I can't talk about it.
I think as Epi dog parents, we do develop that. It's a special bond. I know. I mean, with five dogs, I have a special bond with all of them. But there is just something with Gibson, and I can't quite put my finger on it. Whether it's because of his disease and because of how we learn to relate to each other, and you're in tune. And you just develop this, or if it's something more, because maybe on some other crazy level, they can communicate more. But there just is that something, and you know, folks have used the term heart dog, and I believe I've even heard you say it. And he truly is mine. I mean, I love every one of mine, but he's definitely my heart dog. You know, can we talk a minute about Emma's fund through the veterinary school at the University of North Carolina?
Sure.
Through her memorial fund, what types of things has the neurology department been able to accomplish? You know, what does her fund help fund?
Good question. We have a report back every year, and so far it's been working with KBR, Mesopotamia. My mind's gone blank.
Kepra?
The other one. Kepra. You got it. Thank you very much. Kepra was a human drug, and I think they not sure when it started to be used, but they found it worked very well on some dogs. It's used in both United States and the UK. They did a lot of research first just with Kepra and how it works with various dogs. And a lot of the equine dogs were put on it, and then blood work was sent to North Carolina. And now they're working on how Kepra works with other AEDs or anti-epileptic drugs. They're writing papers, doing things like that. They're always doing something with it. I'm not sure what they're going to do next. But I do know that I was told that they thought they were going to do something with diet. So that would be interesting.
So what, and folks, to stay up on what's happening with that, they can visit the website, canine-epilepsy.com, to see what's going on with that. And as you know from my book and through the campaign I'm doing now, I'm trying to raise some funds to continue to donate to her fund. And if other folks were interested in donating to the Emma's fund through Canine Epilepsy Resources, how could they go about doing so?
There is a PayPal button underneath her I have a page specifically about this with a painting on it, and there is a button there, PayPal button, or I guess contact me. My email is, you want me to give my email now?
Sure.
It's dalcrazy. Dal Crazy, I have Dalmatian, at Cybermesa, CYBERMESA. I have to check with the webmistress to make sure that PayPal button is still working, okay?
Okay.
And I will do that.
All right, that would be great. And, we talked briefly before about the journal. You also have your journal published online that takes you through all of your experiences with Emma. I know I keep a journal, a handwritten journal that's in my first aid kit for Gibson. It's probably good if we just talk to folks, you know, who, if they aren't keeping a journal, it's a great thing to do, to jot down the seizures, the length of the seizures, any kind of information that happens that could be helpful for the vet. I mean, is there anything else that you think, you know, for folks to make note of in that journal?
Yes, vaccinations. Many dogs have adverse reactions to vaccinations, especially the rabies vaccination. And a lot of states now allow you to get a waiver for the rabies vaccination, and most states are now every 3 years for that. Emma didn't have any vaccinations after she was 5 or 6 years old, because every time she did, she seized. And we didn't want that, you know, especially when she wasn't seizing. So. And the various people, Dr. Dodds is one of them, that have done some experimental work on how long the vaccinations last in the body, and they last much longer than ever you think. I'm trying to think of the doctor's name in Michigan, Minnesota. Anyway, she works with him. And they actually have a website about it. It's something to do with vaccinations.
Okay, so if anyone has a question about that, they can email you, and then you can maybe give them the information to look
for.
Marion, in closing, what is the most important thing folks should remember when dealing with an epileptic dog?
Stay calm. A dog picks up vibes very quickly, and I really believe they can still pick them up when it's seizing. But the main thing is to stay calm. don't stop crying, don't yell and scream, just be quiet, stroke the dog.
Great. Don't. Well, excellent. Yes, that's excellent advice. Robert, do you have any other questions for Marion? I know I have a couple of announcements I want to make, and I want to list some other, you know, some epilepsy resources. Did you have any other questions for Marion before?
My only question is a concern that most pet owners have, and it's kind of unfortunate, but what about the costs of these types of medications that you guys are talking about with the phenobarbital and the potassium bromide and that sort of thing? Because unfortunately, a lot of times that dictates these days how well people can take care of their pets. So maybe if you guys can give me an idea about cost for these types of medications.
Mary, would you like to go first?
Phenobarbital is not expensive. And if you can persuade your vet to let you have a prescription to take to the pharmacy, it is much less expensive.
I agree.
In fact, my vet does not keep phenobarbital.
I just renewed Gibson's prescription for phenobarbital yesterday, and it's he takes two pills, so it's a prescription for 60 pills. He takes two a day, so it's a one-month mm-hmm. supply, and it was $17. He gives us a script. I take it up to my local pharmacy. Mm-hmm. Potassium bromide, on the other hand, can be expensive.
It depends whether you're using capsules or liquids.
For my case, it's capsules.
I always use liquid.
Liquid. And I've heard excellent things about liquid as far as getting into the system quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. Gibson is on capsules. It, again, for him, you know, it really depends, Robert. You know, for me, when I get into dogs, I always say, you know, whatever they need. It's the same as
right.
my kids. I don't really mm-hmm. put a price tag on it, because if he needs something, I'm going to go do it, and something else will fly, you know, for that month. You know, and again, it's not something that's always an everyday thing. In Gibson's case, it's not. Yes, it's medications constantly, and the blood test can run into it, but, you know, for me, to make sure that he has a high-quality life with epilepsy, it's something I'm willing to do. And like I said, you know, maybe we'll do ramen noodles for that month, you know. But, you know, it is something as a pet parent that I take it on the same as I would with my children. So, you know, it is something people have to look at. I understand that. But, you know, it is key to know that, you know, if you're looking at the dog and it has seizures and you feel like you're cornered and there is no out, there's so many resources. Come on, find out. It's like Marion said, prescriptions can be reasonable. Pheno is a very reasonable prescription. You know, talk to your vet, work with them, and see what works, you know, before ever coming to a decision that, you know, you would regret.
We have the owner of a compounding pharmacy in California on the list. And he does KBR for a lot of our people. And I used to pay $25 for a pint. Does that sound right? Yeah, a pint, and it would last me 3 to 4 months.
This disease is not an expensive one when you think about other canine diseases like cancer and even diabetes and that sort of thing.
Right.
It's a relatively inexpensive disease to treat then.
It is. I mean, I would have to say yes. How about you, Marion?
Until you get into the other things like Keppra, but that's now generic, so that's brought that price.
And I think we need to say it can be, you know, and again,
mm-hmm.
I hate to say there is a gray area, because it really, you know, it depends on where people's dogs fall on the scale and what they need to do. You know, I would say for Gibson, you know, the blood test, they can actually, if they get to a certain point, they may only need the blood test once a year. I opt to have them actually every 5 months, because I don't want to wait a year to find out that the pheno is affecting his liver.
I used to do that.
Right. By me, it's by choice. Again, it's not a mandatory thing, so people maybe within financial limits can look at these options. But for me, I choose to do it every 5 months to keep a good watch on it,
mm-hmm.
Because I feel like in 5 months, if he's really good, in 5 months, that gives me a good heads up to do something to help that liver. I don't want that liver to suffer and only find out about it a year later when maybe it's too late to do anything for him.
We should mention giving
milk thistle?
The milk thistle?
Milk thistle.
I
like mistletoe. We are getting into that season. yes, you're right.
Milk thistle.
Mary's right. Milk thistle is an excellent, and again, from my experience, I know from Marion, milk thistle helps cleanse the liver, and Gibson, he's on milk thistle. You can go, I believe on your website has how you can dose the dog. You can also talk to your vet. It goes by weight. And I can speak firsthand and say from when I started him on milk thistle to each blood test so far that we've had since milk thistle, he has dropped points in his liver enzymes. So I'm very happy with it. I'm looking again when we go next month. He'll have his full panels again. So I'm interested to see because this will be the third blood test since his milk thistle. But that is something that would be, if you have your dog on phenobarbital, I agree with Marion, definitely look into the milk.
You know, Dorothy, I have one final question, and it does relate to the costs and you know, the financial side of it. What about insurance? I don't know a lot about pet insurance, but how is, you know, a pre-existing condition like epilepsy covered, if at all, under pet insurance?
I do not have the pet insurance for my dogs.
I don't think it's covered.
Right, because of it being a pre-existing condition, one, and two, what I've heard, and if there are any pet insurance companies out there that would cover, please feel free to drop me an email. I'm sure that we would love to know. And you could drop that to thescivive@gmail.com. But to my knowledge, if it's pre-existing or some will turn it down if it's a possible breed hereditary disorder, they have the right to actually refuse it. So in that case, I kind of was like, well, you know, you can pay for the insurance all along, and then they may not cover it anyway. So, you know, that's something that I opt not to do because that is a very gray area again for them. They can turn it down, from what I understand. Marion?
Another thought. You can get much cheaper things like Keppra at Costco, apparently. I don't know about Sam's Club, but people mention Costco. It's a place to get cheaper Keppra and Fino.
Pet vaccinate or medications are now available at human pharmacies like at Costco and Sam's and you know Target and Walmart and that sort of thing.
And I get my Fino at Rite Aid.
And Rite Aid, of course.
The phenobarbital prescription I fill at our neighborhood Rite Aid.
Right.
You know, so it is something. I mean, you know, it's definitely, like I said, there are so many different avenues. And if people aren't sure, right, you know, go on the Canine Epilepsy Resources website, you know, sign up to join that EPIL-K list and put the question out there. I'm almost sure someone out there will definitely have had an experience or have an answer, right, Mary?
Yes. And people always say, oh, guess what? So-and-so, Costco has it at a much cheaper price and so or Sam's Club does, or I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great resource. And, you know, I think that people who, whether they just find out their dog has started with a seizure, I know one gal wrote on Facebook yesterday her dog just had its first seizure, or whether you're a seasoned epi dog parent, you know, whatever, you know, there are so many options. That's probably the big key here is there are lots and lots of options, whether it's diet, whether it's medical, you know, whether it's cost-related. But, you know, reach out. Talk to people out there. Join the EPIL-K9 list. And, you know, you can get some answers that might help steer you in the right direction to give your dog the best that you can within the means that you can.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Marion, thank you so much for being on our show today and talking about canine epilepsy. And, you know, your site is so informative and helpful. And, again, that's canine-epilepsy.com. Listeners can also find you on Facebook and Twitter. I know on Twitter it's the letter canine, epilepsy. That would be on Twitter. And, you know, again, I'm just going to put out there if any readers are interested in purchasing What's Wrong with Gibson, learning about canine epilepsy or anything from the Live Gibstrong awareness collection, you know, please check it out on ArticHousePublishing.com. A portion of all the orders is going to be donated to the MS Fund at Canine Epilepsy Resources. And I'd just like to mention a few other resources or informative sites are available to Ebby Dog parents too. Robert, in this month's issue of American Pet Magazine, listeners can read, I have an article published in there called Ebby Dogs Living Full Lives with Canine Epilepsy. To read it, they can go to AmericanPetMagazine.wordpress.com for just my article, or they can go to AmericanPetMagazine.com and they can actually peruse through several of the issues. It's a great magazine with a lot of information. The one on canine epilepsy is in issue number 4. There's, of course, Canine Epilepsy Resources has their website and Facebook. There's also the Canine Epilepsy Network, the Epi Guardians Angels, Nichols Online Dog Training, Canine Epilepsy UK Online Resources. There's Toby's Foundation. The American Kennel Club has a Canine Health Foundation for Siberian Husky Health. There's a Farrowhound Epilepsy Foundation. There's a Dog Seizures Guide on dogseizures.net. There's Canine Epilepsy Awareness Community Facebook page. There's a Canine Epilepsy group on Facebook. And, of course, if you go to my blog site at 5sides.blogspot.com, you can enter canine epilepsy in the search box, and it'll bring up all my articles on canine epilepsy and give website links for most of the above-mentioned resources, as well as the stories about Gibson's history with canine epilepsy and some of the suggested items for the Epi First Kit that we talked about. You can find us on 5Sides Siberian Husky Canine News and Reviews Facebook page. And Robert, just sidestepping a little bit, with the holiday season about to kick off, I do have a few announcements for Santa sightings and where folks can go with their pets and children to get a picture with the man himself. For folks in the Hudson Valley, New York area, you can bring your pets for free pictures with Santa at the Kingston Animal Hospital on Albany Avenue in Kingston, New York. Dates are Saturday, December 1st and Saturday, December 8th from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. And you can visit their website, kingstonanimalhospital.com. For folks in Florida, the Siberian Husky Rescue of Florida is holding a Christmas Photos with Santa on Saturday, December 8th and Sunday, December 9th from 11 to 4 p.m. at the PetSmart located on Tyrone Boulevard in St. Petersburg. The cost is $9.95 with a PetSmart perks card. Try saying that fast 3 times. And the Siberian Husky Rescue of Florida will get half. And you can check their rescue and info out at Facebook or at cyberrescue.com. And that's with 2 R's, SIBERRESCUE.com. And for families and pets who live in Omaha, Nebraska, Santa's sleigh will be pulling into the Good Karma Dog Center on Frederick Street in Omaha on Sunday, December 9th from 12 noon until 5 p.m. for photos with Santa. And with a $10 donation to the Tasia Blue Siberian Husky Rescue, visitors can get a 4x6 photo with the jolly old elf and Mrs. You can visit Tasia Blue Siberian Husky Rescue on Facebook or at tasiablue.com. And Texas Dog Sled. The Texas Sled Dog Rescue has a few events going on in early December. They will be holding their 15th annual Holiday in the Park, parades, and festival in League City, Texas. There will be a large group of sled dogs getting together for the Saturday evening Grand Night Parade at 6 p.m., as well as the pet parade on Sunday, December 2nd at 1 p.m. at League Park off of Main Street. They are trying to gather as many sled dogs and snow dogs as possible for both parades. And for more information on it, you can email them, which I'll give you at the end of their announcements. They'll also be participating in a Woofstock 2012 on Saturday, December 8th. And that will be rain or shine. There will be photos with Santa in a costume contest. And they're also trying to get a group of sled dog hockey fans to join them for the Houston Aeros Chili Pet Pals night hockey game on Sunday, December 9th. For more information on any of their Texas Sled Dog Rescue events, you can email them at texassleddogrescue.org or email them through their website at texassleddogrescue.org.
Wow, the old man's getting around, isn't he?
He is, which brings us to our next month's guest. next month, of course, is December, and we're ringing in the holiday season with Buddy, the Christmas Husky's foster Hugh mom, Shari Belarjan, or better known as Shay B. Many folks on Facebook are fans of Buddy. For those who don't know this amazing Siberian Husky story, get the tissues ready. Buddy, he'd been a tossed-away, starving, and uncared-for dog. He was also shot, heartworm positive. He had demotic mange, and he had chronic ear infections, and he was also diagnosed with lymphoma. He is now a very happy, proud Siberian, and he's thriving under the care and love of Shay, who says it's her hope by sharing his story that more dogs will be saved, that the next time someone sees a poor dog in need, that they will think of Buddy and stop to help them instead of trying to stay away from the, quote, mangy dog. Buddy is a true holiday story, and we hope listeners will be sure to join us on Sunday, December 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Sci-Fi to hear his story and how he became known as the Christmas Husky.
Very cool. And what time is that again?
That's going to be 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on December 9th.
December 9th. And we'll make sure we promote that on Facebook and Twitter as well.
Definitely.
And if you can, Dorothy, send over some links for all of the links that you talked about in terms of the epilepsy. We'll make sure we put them on the show page here for the Sci-Fi. Looking forward to it. And, again, thanks for our guest. We spanned the country today. We had callers from New Mexico, and, of course, Dorothy is in New York, and I am here in Alaska. So we really spanned the time zones a little bit.
We sure did. And I hope everyone has a great Thanksgiving, and while shopping for all the turkey or tofurkey fixins, why not pick up some food and treats for some homeless huskies at your local shelter or rescue to enjoy, and I know they'll certainly be thankful you did.
Very cool, very cool. Marion, thank you very much for joining us. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Thank you,
okay,
Marion.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye, Dorothy.
Bye-bye. Bye, Robert.
Bye, Robert.
Goodbye, Dorothy. This was the Sci-Vibe. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Just follow DogWorks Radio, and you can get all of our shows there. DogWorks Radio on Facebook and Twitter. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.